Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick, everyone. Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 253 of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Sarah.
She's back.
For today. And this episode is sponsored by Ashley Shedders. Thank you, Ashley.
How crazy if she was here.
I know.
We miss you, Ashley.
Sorry, Ashley.
Okay. So, if you can't tell by the audio, we have a special live episode for you from Wizardly World of Kent 2022. People in our audience, which is some dedicated few listeners because it is raining. Can you give me a round of applause so we can hear you? Say hi.
Hey.
Lovely, lovely. So today we are going to have a special sort of episode for you. We're going to be discussing some of our favorite female characters from the Harry Potter series. So get ready. We're going to chat about some of our famous moments and favorite moments from some of the strongest women in Harry Potter. And I'm first. I'd like to talk about myself.
Oh, my God.
I'm amazing. No. So we all had to choose like one of our favorite female characters from the series, and being the Gryffindor that I am, I had to go with McG. So Professor McGonagall, and I've got to pick a couple of moments. So I'm going to skip that first one. This moment,
really skim these notes down, Tiff. You got 15 minutes. We each get 15 minutes.
Oh gosh!
I thought you meant in total, and I was like, you know, that would never work for us.
Start the timer.
Your small talk does not take away from my talk time. Okay, so a moment that really stands out for me from McGonagall is when she went into protection mode for Professor Trelawney in 5, when Umbridge, our favorite lady, tried to have her thrown out. Right, so Umbridge went through her whole let me evaluate your class things and, you know, I hate most of the teachers. And then she decided she was going to get rid of Trelawney. And it was really unexpected from McGonagall because we know that she doesn't really hold the subject of divination in really, like, high regard. And I don't think she really cared much about Trelawney. However, it seems that Hogwarts professors stick together, and they are a family. And Umbridge was definitely an outsider and came in and tried to break apart that family. And so she says in Prisoner of Azkaban, "Ah, of course," said Professor McGonagall, suddenly frowning. "There is no need to say any more, Miss Granger. Tell me, which of you will be dying this year?" And so, like, that gives us... She doesn't really hold a lot of stake for the subject of divination. But when we get to 5, she really truly stands up for Trelawney, and she's like, there, Sybil, calm down, blow your nose on this, it's not as bad as you think, you're not going to have to leave Hogwarts. Umbridge is like, oh, really? And Dumbledore, like, strides through the door, is like, oh, yeah, because you're not, you can't do that here, you don't have the authority. Kool-Aid man, Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I really like that moment. I really like that moment because, you know, no matter what, that Hogwarts professors were going to stick together and stay a family. I appreciated that moment.
I do think that Dumbledore, like, giving Umbridge that moment of, like, you're wrong, though, is, like, it made things move a little faster with her, like, becoming headmaster. Because she was like, oh, that's not going to happen again. You're not going to tell me what I can and can't do anymore. I'm going to fix this.
Oh, you mean like High Inquisitor?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
No, she's like headmaster for a second, isn't she? Like
headmistress?
Acting headmaster?
Headmistress. But yeah, I don't think this is, she's always High Inquisitor. I don't know. But yeah, I definitely understand
she's
that.
Rude.
Here's another moment. This one will be a quick one. So, standing up for Neville, okay? We covered this at the beginning of Half-Blood when the 6 years are starting to choose their classes and Neville's like, hey, I'd like to continue on with Transfiguration. And McGonagall's like, yeah, I understand that, but you didn't really get the scores that were needed. And he kind of like slumps and goes into like sad mode. And she's like, why do you want to continue on with this subject anyway? I didn't think that you really cared about it. And then he mentions Gran.
Yeah.
Who I have a lot of feelings about. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, just because he's like, charms were a soft option instead of transfiguration. And she's like, it's high time your grandmother learned to be proud of the grandson she's got rather than the one she thinks she ought to have, particularly after what happened at the ministry.
True.
And so hearing those words from her definitely had a great impact on him, because we see who he becomes in Deathly Hallows and how brave, and he kind of becomes who he's truly meant to be. And I think that's part of his transfiguration.
Oh,
you're welcome.
Okay.
And I just wonder, like, is that who the hat really saw when the hat sorted him into Gryffindor? Which I think is definitely a yes, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. I think so.
Okay. Cool.
Agreed.
All right. Flying through these. Protecting Hagrid. I can't leave him out of this. And this is where things get wild at Hogwarts. So they're doing their astronomy evaluation at the top of the tower, and Umbridge thinks that she's, you know, going to be real slick and do this at, I think it's like after midnight where they're taking this exam, which is a whole thing in itself. And she brings some ministry dudes to come and remove Hagrid from the premises. And McGonagall sees this. She comes rushing out. She's like, how dare you? How dare you? And Hermione's like, oh my gosh, it's McGonagall. And she's like, leave him alone, I say. And she's like, on what grounds are you attacking him? Because remember, they like straight up went after him. And no fewer...
They're like trying to stun him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then they stunned her. No fewer than four stunners had shot from the figures around the cabin toward Professor McGonagall, halfway between the cabin and the house. And red beams collided with her. And for a moment, she looked luminous and illuminated by an eerie red glow, and then was lifted off her feet and landed hard on her back and moved no more. Like, she was ready to take on Umbridge, which I think she would have been no problem, but also other ministry officials to keep Hagrid there. And so she's just a brave soul that goes into protection mode.
And we know that earlier in the books, too. We kind of see her, like, she doesn't really trust Hagrid super much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But here she
but
is
again,
defending
it's like
her,
their family.
For him.
Well, and I think it also shows how she, that whole situation is very unjust.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, they're doing it in the middle of the night when they think really no one's going to be watching.
Right.
And being very sneaky about it. And he's also innocent. So, like, she's like, this is wrong.
She right? just wanted to get rid of him because he was half giant.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible human. All right. There's a lot of other moments, but I've got to jump to Deathly Hallows, my favorite. Defending Harry. So, if you remember, they go to, being Luna and Harry, go to Ravenclaw Tower, and they try to look for what this object could be. They want to see what the diadem looks like. And Alecto, Caro, is inside Ravenclaw Tower, stationed there by Voldemort, because he thinks that Harry is going to enter Ravenclaw Tower because of the Horcrux. And so they take off the invisibility cloak, and they're looking at the diadem, and Alecto's like, gotcha, presses the dark mark, right? And so all the Death Eaters are alerted that they've got Harry, because that's what they were supposed to do when they've got Harry. And Luna stuns Alecto. And then Amicus comes and is outside of the entrance when McGonagall approaches, because Amicus can't get inside, because to get into Ravenclaw Tower, you have to answer a riddle or a question. And so McGonagall comes up, answers the question, they go inside, and they see that Alecto is stunned. And Amicus tries to say, oh, because all the Ravenclaw students come out, because when you stun someone, it makes a really loud noise. And he's like, we're going to pin this on the kids. And McGonagall's like, no, we're not. We're not going to do that. You suck. And so...
Is that a direct quote?
It is. It is. Yes. And so Amicus says, he told us Potter might try and get into Ravenclaw Tower to send for him if we caught him. Why would Harry Potter try to get inside Ravenclaw Tower? Potter belongs in my house. And Harry has like a bubble of pride for her after that. And it goes on. It goes on, and it gets terrible. And he tries to pin it on the Ravenclaw students, and McGonagall says the only difference between truth and lies is courage and cowardice. and a difference in short, which you and your sister seem unable to appreciate. But let me make one thing very clear. You are not going to pass off your many ineptitudes on the students of Hogwarts. I shall not permit it. Amicus moves forward and spits in her face. And that's when Mr. Harry Potter uses an unforgivable crucio.
Unforgivable.
In every way. So I just love her love for Harry in that moment. And when they, another, at the end of seven, and I'll end with this, is that when Voldemort has Hagrid bring Harry back from the forest, when Harry's died but didn't die, sorry, everyone, that's a spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
I love it. Voldemort's like, hey, come out and see, Harry Potter's dead, you know, he died trying to run, a lie. And, you know, the people start coming out of the castle, and the first person that screams no
is not Ginny.
It's McGonagall. Truly, though, it's McGonagall. And the scream was more terrible because he had never expected or dreamed that Professor McGonagall could say, make such a sound. And I will end my section with, have a biscuit, Potter.
That's her shining moment, for sure. Yes. All right.
I tried to go fast. Was that 15 minutes or less?
I think it was less.
It was almost 15. You had like 3 minutes to spare. You just want to joke around for 3 minutes?
My throat. La, 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 la.
Oh, my gosh.
You go ahead, man.
Okay, I chose to discuss Hermione. Because, yes, she's a Gryffindor, but I do think that she tends to have some Slytherin tendencies.
True.
These are just, like, my favorite things, or, like, her best moments, in my opinion, breaking it down by logic, intuition, and bravery. So, for logic, I chose the very first example I think that we see of this is at the end of Sorcerer's Stone, when they are going through everything to get to the Sorcerer's Stone and Voldemort. Harry never would have been able to get through that potions room without her and her logic of figuring out that riddle.
Nope.
And I just think that that right there is like, that's like the first big example of like, this is how Hermione is going to help push the story forward. She's really going to be the one who's there to make sure that Harry gets through everything he needs to get through.
Well, I think that scene also shows that Harry can't do it alone.
Yes.
Because he needs, like, everybody,
I thought
know?
You were going to say has no logic.
He's nuts.
Oh, no.
Possibly that, too.
Oh.
No, yeah, for sure. Because
he couldn't catch a letter.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't pick one up from the floor.
Like, I just cannot with that scene. I'm like, you're jumping. Anyway, we all know. Look at the floor.
There's a quality pooch.
Oh, hi.
He's got a little tie.
Oh, my gosh.
I love your dog.
Oh, my gosh.
You dog.
Gryffindor? Yes. What's her name? Nika?
Cute.
Aww.
She's
oh,
like,
you
what?
Heard me. Yeah, you're a good girl.
Oh, my gosh.
You may continue.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Her next, I think this is kind of an interesting one, because I chose storming out of divination, not necessarily because I think that, like, how she handled that situation was good. But it does show that she realized her strengths and her weaknesses. And storming out, like I said, maybe wasn't the best thing, but she realized that she's a girl of logic. And class, what am I looking for?
Yeah.
There's a word I'm looking for. It's not the word class, but whatever. We're going to go with it.
Okay.
Is not
subject.
For her.
Subject. There you go.
That's it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Literally, guys, I've said this all day. There's something wrong with my brain today. I
think.
I
live
know.
Events will do for
it's
you.
I don't
rain.
Know what it is.
It's the rain.
Yeah. It's the rain. The rain.
Did your hip hurt, Sarah?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, when it's rainy, it always does.
My hip does?
Yes.
My left hip.
I'm learning something new about myself today.
I thought that was kind of her realization that her thing is logic and divination just doesn't make sense for her. And I think that it was hard for her. That was a really hard thing for her to admit to herself because she was always good at everything that she tried. So to come to that realization and be able to accept it was a big thing for Hermione. Mm-hmm. Also, just a huge general thing with logic, her bag in seven, like the preparedness to just have.
I'm confused. What? It's like her bag.
Her little bag. Her
endless bag.
It took me like bag. I got there.
Just being that prepared and that ready, because again, that was something that Harry did not think about. Like, oh, we might have to like peace out real quick and have no plan. Like, no, like. And it was even like, oh, well, I left this. And she's like, no, you didn't. Like,
no, I packed it. I have to say something, though. She packed Ron's two small jeans, though.
You know?
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
What does he still have those for?
I don't know.
Can't you just, like, enlarge them? They're wizards. They got magic.
They're wizards. You know?
Zippity-doo-dah-day. Here's some bigger pants.
I agree, Sarah. Why couldn't they make those jeans bigger?
Plot hole.
Oh.
Plot hole.
I don't like that.
Can't you transfigure some pants, Hermione? You're pretty smart.
True. Very true.
Should have wrote it.
You should have.
So with her, then I wanted to go on to her intuition, because there's a lot of really big moments in the books where that is in the forefront for, like, decisions that she makes. So, like, the first one I thought of was the handling of the Xenophilius Lovegood situation in Deathly Hallows. She was just very aware of her surroundings, noticed in a rumpant horn, yeah. Got them out of there when he betrayed the trio and summoned the Death Eaters. And not only did she get them out of there, she also made sure that the Death Eaters saw Harry to save Xenophilius, because she knew that he was just trying to get his daughter back. Like, right. He didn't really do what he did out of malice. Mm-hmm. It was purely for family, and she understood that.
She thinks so fast.
She's like, a quick thinker in seven.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's another moment when, I don't know if you have this, though. Do you have any more?
I don't have anything else from seven, so please tell me what.
Well, in seven. No, when Harry is, they're in the tent, and he says Voldemort's name, which we know has a taboo on it, and she,
does a
stinging jinx on Harry, so he's almost unrecognizable to those people. And his glasses are off, and his scar is stretched.
And Draco, wink, wink.
And then he lies to Bellatrix.
I don't know if I could lie to Bellatrix.
Where is our little Bellatrix?
Yeah, is she around
here? She's around here.
Are you talking about Draco lying to her?
Yeah.
Yes.
He probably lied to her a lot.
True.
He's probably used to it.
Mm. Also with the Xenophilius
thing. No, I didn't
thing.
Steal the milk, you know? I didn't eat the last biscuit, you know?
Biscuits.
Also with the Xenophilius thing, she also, like, maintained Ron's cover in that situation, too, which was really difficult. So, like, she did a lot in a very short little moment.
She's a smart
of
girl.
Of quick thinking.
Yep.
Catching Rita Skeeter is also,
oh,
was
God.
Also based on intuition, though it was reckless. So she didn't think about the wider consequences of the act. She just acted. So I would say that this also falls under the category, in my opinion, of being a true Gryffindor, because she didn't really think about her actions before she did them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're reckless.
What?
I said we're reckless.
It was her.
A little bit.
Sorry. I thought you said
I don't
it
know
too.
Where the sound was so weird. From. And then to go with this, also forcing Rita to print the whole truth about Voldemort was
the
was
truth,
huge.
Enough about the truth.
Katie, I was about to say that. I've seen it in my head.
Taking Umbridge out to the forest to try to scare her. I never thought that her intention was to have whatever happened to Umbridge actually happen. But her intuition to lie to Umbridge, come up with this whole idea to just get her to go into the forest to buy them time and to get Umbridge away from the other Order members was just, I mean, she was just stalling. She was just trying to, she was winging it, and she did a great job. And unfortunately, something really awful happened to Umbridge, but that was never her intention. But I think that that was really quick thinking on her part.
Yep.
And then bravery, truly being a Gryffindor, slapping Malfoy or punching Malfoy, like, pretty awesome moment in Hermione's little repertoire of moments, for sure. Also, and this is really sad, but, like, withstanding Bellatrix torture in seven is also a huge Gryffindor moment, because we see how, like I was saying, how quick thinking she is, but, like, in that moment we see her psychological and physical stamina, because to withstand that and come out of it, I don't want to say unscathed, but, like, it could have been a lot worse than it was.
Yeah.
So that was a huge moment for her. And, like, that moment, I pulled a little snippet from it. And Bellatrix says, I'm going to ask you again, where did you get this sword? Where? And Hermione says, we found it. We found it. Please, Hermione screamed again. Bellatrix, you are a lying, filthy mudblood. What else did you take? What else? Answer me. Crucio. Hermione's scream echoed off the walls upstairs. So that was sad, and that's where I'm ending. Sorry. But Hermione's awesome. I love her.
That was sad, but hey, she's awesome.
Let's lift this back up.
Yeah, all right. So I chose Tonks. Coincidentally, Hufflepuff. That was not on purpose. I was just like, I want to pick Tonks. Why not?
We actually, didn't even... I mean, obviously, Hermione's not, but I was like, she's got Slytherin tendencies. We,
Yeah, we all picked someone from our house, which is really interesting. Yeah. It's funny. So we really do see so little of Tonks in the books, which is kind of sad. Yet she's super fascinating. She's brave and witty. She's super clumsy. I think I take after her a lot.
Yep.
She's super talented enough to become an Auror at such a young age. And yet she's young and vibrant. So she's got this really serious job, but she's still totally herself. She's never afraid to be herself, which is pretty amazing considering her metamorphmagus powers. I'm going to say that wrong, but I'm going to try. And I'll get into more of that a little bit later. Just some cool stuff she did. She professed her love in front of an entire room full of people during a really intense situation. Dumbledore had just died. And even though she'd been turned down time and time again, she didn't give up. I will admit when my boy did wrong, that was one moment. We're going to get to another one later. She shows us that life is too short to just sit and wait for what you want. You have to be proactive in chasing your dreams. And we see that with her Auror career, and then we do see that with Remus as well. She's also an amazing example of forgiveness. Remus kind of walked out on his unborn child and pregnant wife. Not a good thing to do, and yet she still found it somewhere in her heart to welcome him back. I don't know if everyone could do that.
He had a moment.
I think she knows her husband well, you know?
Yeah. I would
probably like,
that.
You're an idiot. Come on.
Right. And Tonks is kind of what Harry's future as an Auror might look like if we had any sort of real glimpse into that. And she has to have been so driven to go after that and achieve it so young. This is my personal headcanon, but I think she was I like to think she was the first in a long time to be considered for a mentorship for Aurorship. Aurorship? Did
sure.
I just make that up?
I don't know. Go
I
ahead.
I like it.
We'll take it.
And I also maybe think maybe Moody was so impressed. He was I want her to be under my wing. I want to take her. Let's see.
R.I.P.
But Harry is just handed the job because he's the Harry Potter effect. They're just oh, you want to be an Auror? Here you go. Sure.
I thought we were trying to lift this up.
I'm just saying.
I'm just trying to be nice.
Right? My favorite thing about Tonks, she's never afraid to be herself. Mm-hmm. She's not interested in being anything other than herself, which is kind of really interesting because she can change her appearance at will. She could be whatever, whoever she wants. And yet we only see her using her powers as a way to extend her personality and never hide her true self. Mm-hmm. She never uses her powers for any superficial reasons. And that's some serious
only
self-confidence.
Only to joke around, you know? Right. That's the only time you really see it.
Which is part of her personality.
Yeah, which
fun
is great.
And clumsy and whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some hell of self-confidence that I could take a leaf out of for sure. Mm-hmm. Another headcanon, this is my final point. I like to think of Tonks as androgynous or non-binary or gender fluid. We talk about this a lot on one of our bonus episodes. Just some examples, she doesn't like to be referred to by her feminine, putting that in quotes, birth name, which is Nymphadora. And if you look at the definition for metamorphmagus, I did it. Unlike animagi, metamorphmagi can take a wide variety of forms, changing sex and age, potentially looking like anyone at all, or even just changing a part of their appearance, such as the color of their hair or the shape of their noses. Also, a metamorphmagus is born, not made. It is not a skill that can be learned. I just think it's a really good parallel for any sort of LGBT thing, you know? I think we could all use to be a little bit more like Tonks.
Yeah.
All right, it's my turn. I haven't
it's
done this
your
in a while.
Turn. You got
love
this.
Tongues.
So I picked Feyre. Oh, wait, just kidding.
You're out
wrong
of your
podcast.
Mind.
So I picked Luna because I really like how unique she is. And really, she's the kind of person that, like, doesn't really care or think about, like, what other people think of her. She just is her. Mm-hmm. And she's just unapologetically herself. That's a big word. And she also never seems to judge other, like, she's not the type of person to judge other people either. So she's like, come as you are. She really doesn't care. And she, what I also love about her is she has such a different perspective, and she brings a different perspective that, like, others probably don't think about. So some instances. I saw when Harry and friends are going back to school in Order of the Phoenix, Harry thinks that the school has changed, like, the way that they carry, like, the carriages go up, because he now sees Thestrals. And so I always love the scene because it just makes me chuckle, because she's like, no, like, I see him too. And she, like, doesn't even think anything of it because she's been seeing them since she first started Hogwarts.
Right.
And she tells him, don't worry, you're just as sane as I am. And he's like, I don't think that's very comforting, but okay.
It's like, oh, really?
And she's really great at supporting her friends. She has no problem telling Harry, like, right in front of a bunch of people, that she's like, I believe you about Voldemort coming back, and I believe that you fought him. Like, I'm on your side. But does not care if anyone, because a majority of people didn't believe that and didn't support him and were not kind to Harry. And so she was really always in his corner. She's readily signs up to learn Defense Against the Dark Arts from Harry. And she even supports Gryffindor in Quidditch, which I think in my head canon, because I know at least Cleveland sports are very, like,
great.
You know, everyone has, like, their team. Like, even, like, the, like, Ed's Ignatius, like, in Cleveland is very much like you're either an Ed's team or an Ignatius team. And that's how it is, like, in my head with, like, all Gryffindors cheer for Gryffindor, all Ravenclaws cheer for Ravenclaw. And then you see her and she doesn't care. She's got that giant thing on her head and she's like, it even roars. And, the Ravenclaw aren't even playing.
The Ravenclaw.
The Ravenclaw University. So Harry's great at thinking that he has to do all of these things alone. That is very much like how he is throughout all of the books. And in, what is it, Order of the Phoenix? Half-Blood Prince? Order of the Phoenix, right?
But which moment are you referring to?
When Sirius dies. You can tell that I haven't done this in a minute. I also don't know any of the names. So when they're going to the ministry, first of all, he's like, y'all are not coming with me. And then he's like, okay, Ron's going to come with me. And then everyone else is like, no, we're all coming. Even Hermione, like, stomps her feet. She's like, you aren't leaving me here. Because, like, Harry's like, well, we'll just go. And then you guys can, like, maybe follow us. And she's like, we're all going. And they're like, well, we have no way to get there. And she's the one that's like, well, we could fly. And then Ron's like, well, there's only broomsticks. She's like, there's other ways to fly. So, like, that's just an example of her having, like, another example of really thinking outside the box. And I don't know, is it a movieism where she's in the forest with him talking with the Thestrals, and she's like, if it was me, I love that scene where she's like, if I was Voldemort, like, I would make sure that you feel so alone that you are going to, you know, act accordingly, where you have no one in your corner and you think you're so alone and all of those things. Because really no one else has thought that and said that thought out loud.
Yeah.
She's seen being caring and comforting to Harry after the loss of his godfather, and kind of relating to him about having her mom also his past, and they kind of bonded over that, and he leaves the conversation like having his heart a little less heavy than it was before.
She's like the only person that he can kind of, I don't know, essentially like stomach to be around at that time.
And I also like, she comforts Hermione after Lavender makes fun of her in Half-Blood Prince. And I like that you've seen Hermione not be kind to her. Like, Hermione does not like her. They're very polar opposites of, like, she's very whimsical and Hermione's very logical. So, like, they have essentially completely different, like, belief systems in the way that they think about things. And Hermione's like, well, if I can't see it, I don't believe it, where she believes in all kinds of things that probably don't exist. But that's Luna, and it's wonderful. And so Luna doesn't care that she hasn't been the nicest human to her, and she's just, she comforts her because that's how Luna is. It says, I think in the movies that we almost forget, like, how Harry's other friends besides Ron and Hermione are so important to the story, because Luna and all the other ones, like, also, she never backs down when it comes to, almost like, what do you need me to do? Like, I'm here. Like, I'm going to support you. I will fight. She fought in the entire battle. She was with him in the Ravenclaw common room. Mm-hmm. And so she has no problem fighting because she's like, you know, this is right. And I say, because we see the books from Harry's perspective, we don't really get to see what happens in Deathly Hallows with the students that, like, go back to Hogwarts. But we can speculate about, like, the exact events. We do know that both her and her father were very vocal for their support for Harry and, like, the cause of, like, the light side. And so she was taken by Death Eaters, and while she was in Malfoy Manor, her and Ollivander were, like, a big comfort to each other. And you can kind of see, like, they shared, like, a little bit of a camaraderie after being in there for so long. And then when they leave Malfoy Manor and Dobby has been killed, she's the first one to, like, say something over his grave. And she says to him, "Thank you so much, Dobby, for rescuing me from that cellar. It's so unfair that you had to die when you were so good and brave. I'll always remember what you did for us. I hope you're happy now."
I just love her, like, way that she just gives whatever's on her mind, just simply and honestly and raw without any apology for it.
I love that a lot of people, really, you see Harry and Luna are the ones that, like, they don't think of Dobby as, like, just a house elf. They just think of him, like, almost as, like, a friend.
Yeah.
So other people would be like, well, it's just a house elf. So a house elf, like, why do you care? Like, why are you burying him? And Harry even says, like, I want to make sure, like, he does it the Muggle way, essentially.
Yeah.
Because he deserves it.
Yeah.
And that's how Luna is. She thinks that, like, he did a wonderful thing for them, and she's never looked down on them or, like, any other creatures, because she goes on to, like, do magizoologist, right?
There you go.
Which is what her great-grandfather, no, godfather, great, is it her great or just her father-in-law, right?
Father-in-law.
Like, Newt Scamander.
Grandfather-in-law. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is Newt Scamander, if you didn't know. So she's like, I just love how she shows her love and respect for beings, even when, like, others would deem them lower than themselves, because a lot of people would not have given Dobby the time of day and would not have cared that he died.
Yeah.
And, you know, she fights till the end of the Battle of Hogwarts, and it's really just, she's really just a great friend to Harry and the others. And I love that she really doesn't ever change herself to make herself more digestible for the other, for, like, ever people, because, like, a lot of people don't like her. They call her loony. They don't care for her, which is unkind.
I think she's the one that tells, she suggests to Harry after the battle when they're all in the Great Hall, because everybody's trying to, like, hug on him and thank him for everything, and she suggests that he goes, and that's when he gets Ron and Hermione, and they leave under the cloak, because she's like, oh, look, whatever she says. And everybody's like, what? And then they can, essentially escape. Yeah. And go talk to Dumbledore's portrait.
Yeah. So I said that she really doesn't shrink herself so others are more comfortable around her. She's someone that really I strive to be, because, like, she truly is unapologetically herself. And not that she doesn't care, but she really doesn't. She's just going to be her.
Right.
Yeah. I said she's a good egg.
She's a good egg. Very true.
Yeah, I really like her.
Okay.
That's all I got.
All right. I think we are going to go to our social media.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you guys enjoyed listening to us chat, make sure that you follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and tell your friends about us, because if you liked it, then maybe they will as well. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube at Swish and Flick Podcast, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Swish Flick Cast. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can head on over to patreon.com/Swish Flick Cast. Supporting our podcast keeps us going, and it gives you access to our exclusive Felix Files episodes, which is what Katie was talking about with our episode on Tonks. Mm-hmm. Also, our Discord channel, live recordings, trivia games 4 times a year, Swish swag boxes, and more. Thank you all so much for your support to all of our current patrons. And then also, we are always accepting Potter stories. Normally, at the end of an episode, we share a Potter story. We're under a time constraint with this one, which is why we didn't include one. But we are always accepting them. So if you have a Potter story that you'd like to send to us, or just any fun things, questions, or concerns, you can do so to our email, which is swishflickcast@gmail.com. And then if you want to follow your hosts on social media, myself and Katie are on Instagram at the Petrus Family. Tiffany is on Instagram at tiffswish_flick, and Sarah is on Instagram at O'Malley with 3 H's.
All right, Kent, we did it. We did it in the rain. We did it.
Shout out to Woodsies for the music setup, sound setup. Shout out to everyone who's here.
Yeah. And Main Street Kent for putting this together.
Yes. Thank Main Street Kent for everything.
After being away for so long, too, it feels good to have this be a little bit more back to normal, honestly.
Yeah.
Guys, there's this Death Eater staring me down.
No.
I'm a little scared.
Oh, don't you do it.
No.
Oh.
Oh, no. I love it.
You've been standing there. It's been great. I love it. Very good. Take a bow. So once again, we want to thank Main Street Kent and everybody for having us out here again. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love these live events. I love getting to meet all of you and meeting some hopefully new listeners of our podcast. We are Swish and Flick, so if you don't already follow us on any of the podcast listening platforms, go ahead, take your phone out and do that right now. But we are a book club style, so we do our research, we know our stuff, and we are serious in that sense, but we are also four friends who love to get silly, and those of you who are already listeners who have traveled to come and see us know that, and we are just one big family community of Potterhead nerds, and we love it. So once again, thank you, everyone. And that concludes this week's episode from Wizardly World of Kent 2022. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the muggles get you down.
Amazing! Just my voice!
Way to go!
It didn't lightning.
Truly, truly, though, thank you, everyone who came out here in the rain. Seriously. Really, really genuinely appreciate every single one of you.
I thought you said everyone but one of you. And it was like, wait, is there someone I gonna that you pick? Don't think?
Who's the exception?
The one is Sarah, maybe.
I don't know. Oh my God. Can't stand me anymore.
And the plan is still to do the adult costume contest at 4. Yes. So, hopefully it stays like this because I could deal with this.
That's not
hopefully
bad.
It gets better. Stops.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's gonna rain.
I hope it stays this light. Is what I meant.
We know it. All right. So feel free, walk around. If you want to meet us, we're gonna be back there.
Our tent kind of got destroyed because
Danny DeVito's down.
Okay. Danny DeVito was out. He's now sleeping.
Yeah, he needs to go to bed.
But if anybody wants to come get a picture, we're gonna be over there. We have a little like Polaroid type collage going on. We did have to take it down, but we're gonna post a picture of it at the end of the day.
Y'all, I haven't talked about Harry Potter in a minute.
Honestly, this is more people than I anticipated for the rain, so kudos to all
super
of you
super dedication.
I will preface with
let me just double check that thing's recording, because knowing me it's not.
Okay, well then I can talk. I had a lot of notes.
Cool.
And I'm probably gonna have to cut them in half.
Tiffany thought this was going to be the Tiffany hour.
I've been gone a while.
I pulled up the notes and I was like, oh my gosh, she's got like 5 pages of notes.
I have a lot of feelings.
I like that you say you've been gone a while.
I have been.
Right.
You, not longer than you.
Gotta put my hair up. I'm hot.
If you are still walking the streets of Kent, come over. We are doing a live podcast. You're brave for staying in the rain. Let's go.
All right.
Yeah, I see you. Come on. They're like, no, not today. All right. Are we ready?
As I'll ever be.
Think so.
Okay. Well, let's do this.
Genuinely nervous because I haven't talked about Harry Potter in a long time.
I think you'll remember.
It's like riding a bike.
I was going to say that.
It's like riding a broom.
Oh, Catherine. Okay. Here we go.
It's 253 is correct, right?
253,
I sure hope.
I thought you were talking about the time, and I was like, no.
Solid. Okay, here we go.